Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Greek elections resulted in a second win for Syriza party leader Alexis Tsipras on Sunday. The embattled prime minister had faced growing uncertainty over his mandate after a stunning victory on an anti-austerity platform earlier this year and then a capitulation to creditors. The snap elections were a major risk, and pollsters had been unable to predict a clear victory. But Mr. Tsipras's party emerged with a plurality of votes. Still, only 56% of Greek voters turned out to cast ballots, much lower than in the two elections earlier this year. In his victory speech, Tsipras said the mandate that the Greek people gave us is crystal clear: to get rid of the wickedness and the regime of corruption and intertwined interests that have ruled the country for years. Syriza will have 145 seats in parliament out of 300. This is only four fewer than what it had when it first came into power. Joining me now is Harry Konstantinidis. He is a faculty member in economics at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. Welcome to Uprising, Harry.
Good to be with you, Sonali.
How is it that the pollsters were unable to predict Tsipras's victory? He is claiming a four-year mandate now from the Greek public, but the fact that he would be reelected, that Syriza would get enough seats, was very much in question leading up to Sunday's election.
I think this has something to do with the way that pollsters have been operating in Greece. So in the lead up to the election, the pollsters were faced with a large number of undecided voters. So if you had looked at the latest opinion polls before the elections, you could see that approximately 20% of the voters did not know what to vote for. Primarily, these were a series of voters that had been disappointed. So in the lead up to the election, a significant chunk of these voters actually ended up going back and voting for Syriza, which made for this 7% difference between Syriza and the second party, New Democracy. So it was Tsipras managing to convince the undecided voters to come back to Syriza that made for this difference, which the pollsters were unable to predict.
What's really interesting is that after Tsipras won, the former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis wrote an op-ed in The Guardian entitled, "The lenders are the real winners in Greece. Alexis Tsipras has been set up to fail." And I'm wondering if you've seen this op-ed. He claims, Varoufakis claims, that the Greek leader won on three promises the Troika will make it hard for him to keep, the Troika being the group of three major creditors. What do you make of this?
I think he's probably right in some ways, but I think that he was also advocating for an impossible position. It is true that the austerity program that Greece has signed, that the Tsipras government signed in July, was a capitulation. It sets draconian targets, and it is a measure. It's a program that has so many recessionary measures that it is set up in a way that would make the Greek economy fail. And it's set up in a way that would make Syriza take the blame for the fail of the program. Now, having said that, unless you are willing to advocate for an exit from the Eurozone, in reality, there was no other option left. So it's after what we have seen over the last few months, it's very difficult to maintain the idea that the creditors were just bluffing and that they would not risk losing Greece because Greece would be the weakest link of the euro. So I think this idea, this strategy that the lenders are only bluffing, I think it came to its end. Mm-hmm. So Tsipras was faced with the option of either capitulating, either striking a deal and then setting up his party and setting up the government and trying to create an apparatus that would allow him to govern and at least do some progressive changes, or leaving the euro. And given that he was unwilling to do the latter, he had to opt for the former.
Now, the whole trajectory of what has happened to Greece under the Syriza party leadership has been so fascinating to the U.S. left, primarily because of the way in which the Syriza party rose from being an outsider to a leader of a major country, and that it did so on a platform that was very critical of the global capitalist system. Now, this reversal has been quite a blow for the left, wouldn't you say?
I think we have to take some lessons, and I don't know that we are already in a position to actually evaluate what the lessons of the Syriza platform are. So I would I would suggest a little bit of caution in the way that we all of us interpretate these changes. So Syriza did come to power on the platform to end austerity. What we can't do this in one country only. So this idea that you would end austerity in one country only, or at least this imagination, was never part actually so much of Syriza's line. Syriza's platform basically suggested that we would go to the Europeans and we would convince them to end austerity, and we see that this failed. Now, we have taken some lessons about what the Eurozone really stands for, and we have taken some lessons about how the Eurozone operates, but I don't think that we have to be as pessimistic as sometimes we on the left tend to be. I think we have to take the lessons that we can and create new strategies. When one avenue fails, we have to be creative in finding another avenue of continuing this struggle. So in some ways, I don't think that the Syriza folks are going to stop being critical of the way that global capitalism, especially in its neoliberal form, operates. So I think they will maintain some of that, but under different constraints. I mean, in some ways, they had this realization about the things that they can and cannot do within the Eurozone. So now they have to be more experienced, now they have to be more determined, and now they have to find ways of promoting policies that would promote social justice, even within the context of this austerity agreement. It's very difficult, of course, but this is the challenge for the left, to always try to be creative. And that's something that we will have to judge them by.
Certainly the array of opposition that has so much more power is quite formidable. Just focusing on Tsipras for a moment, the New York Times, in describing his cabinet that he's put together and the government that he's formed today, said that Tsipras has achieved something that no other Greek leader has managed since the start of the economic crisis in 2009. He has won two consecutive elections and a national referendum, despite widespread speculation that his popularity would be short-lived and that one of Greece's more established parties would soon be back in office. So certainly he's proved to be an adept politician, but then again, that necessarily doesn't mean that it's something that people should necessarily emulate, should it? I mean, the point of the left is certainly to take power, but only if it can make change through taking power, not to simply remain in power for power's sake.
That's right. Yes, I agree with you on that. However, I do think that, I mean, we'll see is the truth, right?
Yeah.
In some ways, Tsipras was given a second chance by an electorate that was fed up with what was going on in Greece over the last 5 years. In some ways, I think it recognized that Tsipras was doing his best within the context of the Eurozone, and the Greek electorate did not want to leave the Eurozone. If they did, they would have voted for the splitter party, Popular Unity, which did not even enter parliament. So we have some signs that the Greek electorate wanted to push Greece and Europe to the left, but at the same time, it wasn't ready for the radical breaks that one would need if they wanted to build socialism now, here and now. So in some ways, of course, then there's another question about whether Tsipras, you know, how does a leadership communicate and how does it relate to the electorate? Should Tsipras be pushing people to the left or should he be dragged by people to the center? And that's, again, an open question. And given that these people are not old school professional politicians for the sake of power, I would expect that they have to be challenged on how to keep finding ways of mitigating the terrible structural adjustment program that they've signed. And they have to find equivalent measures, and they have to find ways of mobilizing the people and building a more progressive, a more socially just Greece. And that's what to some extent the Greek people gave them a second chance to do. The Greek people gave them a second chance to do the reforms that Syriza claimed it didn't have enough time to do over the last 7 months. There may be some truth to that. Let's keep pushing them to the left and let's judge them based on what they do. We'll see whether they are able to deliver. Clearly the setting is very difficult in which they operate. The structural adjustment program tries in some ways to tie its hands, but there may be ways of creating ruptures and creating this spaces for confrontation with this neoliberal Europe. We'll see.
One of the things that also emerged in the election that hasn't gotten as much attention is the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party garnering 7% of the vote. What does this mean? Are they getting more or less powerful?
I would say it's about the same, and that's dangerous. They basically got a little bit more in terms of percentages than what they got last time. Their number of voters went down, though. So in the previous election, they had gotten 6.3% and approximately 390,000 voters. In this election, because of the lower turnout, they increased their percentage, even though they lost approximately 10,000 votes. So we know that there is a sizable part of the Greek population that has no problems whatsoever voting for a neo-Nazi party. Again, the question is, how do you stop this? Right. The question is, how do you actually confront this in everyday life? How do you actually democratize the repressive apparatus of the Greek state? Because we know that in certain precincts where most of the special forces of the police were voting, the neo-Nazi party maintained its very high percentages in those specific precincts. So it's a process of actually confronting this and changing this in daily life. And that's, again, something that Tsipras and Syriza need to tackle immediately, actually, going forward.
Now, Harry, between the referendum over the IMF and the Troika's proposals and mm-hmm. this second election of Alexis Tsipras, a huge social problem emerged in Greece and in other European states, and that was the problem of migration from countries like Syria, Libya, etc., this massive refugee crisis ramped up. It had been there at a lower level earlier, but it ramped up pretty seriously over the summer. Did that have any impact on the dynamics of Greek politics?
I think it may have had, I would say, a minor impact. We saw that Golden Dawn, and especially actually the New Democracy Party, the major conservative party in Greece, tried to capitalize on the frustration of some people who were living on islands with the refugee crisis. But at the same time, and here is a victory for Syriza and for the left in general, I think that the Greek population responded very calmly and with solidarity and with humanism to the refugee crisis. So if you compare the reaction of significant parts of the Greek population and the Greek political scene with other reactions that we have seen across Europe, I would say that the Greek people, despite the fact that they're in the eighth year now of a deep crisis, reacted with a lot of solidarity and reacted with a lot of understanding for the hardships that refugees are going through. So I think this was for me, like being Greek and not particularly, you know, like proud of being Greek in some ways, I think it was a moment where, you know, like it was a good moment to know that people are responding to the plight of refugees in a very mature, in a very responsible, in a very humanist way, which is what you want. I mean, you want people to feel for others rather than to look for scapegoats. And I think that most people in Greece did that. And we saw a massive campaign of solidarity. We saw that especially the left and the anarchists in Greece did a very good job in like building the structures of support for refugees and immigrants. I think that people in general, even though the state doesn't have any capacity because of the crisis that we are in, people try to make up for that in a mature and progressive way.
Finally, Harry, the ordinary Greeks who might be sort of, you know, at their wit's end in terms of trying to see this financial crisis be solved, have taken to bartering and in order to make ends meet. And there's some really interesting news coverage, you know, of graphic artists exchanging designs for olive oil and people just doing this informal bartering and exchanging goods and services. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about that, you know, people's sort of ingenuity and innovation and making do with whatever they can.
Well, I think there's a lot of that over the last few years. This is not a new phenomenon. This is not something that has started like over the last 7 months. In some ways, you see the rise of different ways of people to exchange with one another and to conduct economic activity outside the traditional marketplace that we are familiar with. Mm. So we have seen the rise of social and solidarity, economy, activities. I mean, so we've seen social pantries, we see people exchanging with one another over the last few years. We see local exchange trading systems and alternative currencies spring up in different parts of Greece. We see people exchanging without money and basically like exchanging time with one another. And to some extent, you know, like we are familiar with this social economy and solidarity economy efforts. They became crucial in the time of crisis. Now, to some extent, again, the question is, how do you deal with all these efforts and how do you help people realize their potential even in the midst of a crisis? And Syriza will be judged by how it responds to efforts like that. Syriza will be judged by how it relates and how it deals with self-management and self-organization efforts that have sprung up in different parts of Greece. And this is something that people need to press Syriza on so that it doesn't, you know, like give the factories back to its old, to their old owners, but it lets the workers around the factories, as they have been trying to do for the last couple of years and have been facing hardships and difficulties from the legal system of Greece. So we'll see how it goes. And we have to keep pressing them. But I don't think that the story is done yet.
Harry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
My guest is Harry Konstantinidis, a faculty member in economics at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. This is Uprising. When we come back, Michelle Goodwin joins us. Stay tuned.